I'm going to briefly teach this morning. And the goal of this morning is really a word of encouragement. So you'll see that I'm stopping with the series specifically because I just felt that there's a need for encouragement. And the Bible does say frequently, encourage one another. So I'm going to share a story. But before I do that, I just want you to look at the next slide, and I'd like you to think for a moment, what is it that you face in life? What is it that you face? I mean, everywhere I go, people that I know ask me, so Ross, how's it going with you? How's it going with the family? And how's it going with the church? So any one of those or all of those above. And then it's difficult for me because there is always, when you speak about the church, when we speak about family, when you speak about the nation, there's always something amazing happening. And rarely ever there's not a challenge. Isn't it like that? So there's always something that you recognize, and if you have eyes of light, it's always easy to say, wow, this is amazing. This is really going well. And at the same time, it's always like, And then there's that one situation. En daar's hier 'n kerkmens, verstaan? Sometimes it's jy 'n kerkmens, maar anyway. But there's always this one situation. So I want to ask you, what is it that you face? What is it that challenges you? You know, maybe it's going well in your household. Maybe you are your household, single, all the single ladies, all the single. Anyway, maybe you are your household. So things are quite simple, and therefore it's not inside your house that is a challenge, but maybe just outside your house. Maybe just the fact that you drive to work every day, and when you drive to Pinehurst or when you drive somewhere in the city, you're driving past communities or people, or you're just aware of a family member, a friend, that is really going through a really, really tough time. Or maybe it's just the nation as a whole that really concerns you. You know, there's always something that really challenges you, that really actually calls for your faith, that really calls for your activation of your faith, saying, God, this is too big for me. So the second question I want to ask, do you have what it takes? In your own opinion, do you have what it takes? Last week on Sunday evening, during the worship, there was a moment where I just felt God was saying that there are one or two individuals that really feel, at the moment, they feel insignificant. That is the word. They feel insignificant. They feel as though, I don't have what it takes. What I have is not enough. What I can bring is not sufficient. It's not important. It's disregarded. You know, it's like, wat ek het is net, dis hierdie massive situasie. Or there's a real dream or desire in your heart, or even a promise from God in your heart, but you go like, you really don't feel as though you have what it takes. You're waiting for something else. You're waiting for something else from the outside. You're waiting for someone to help from the outside, which is not a bad thing if you call to God, but it's that feeling of insignificance. So I'm going to, with that, last night I was at the wedding, really great wedding, and then saw old friends. It's amazing. I like weddings because you see old friends that you haven't seen for many, many years. And I saw this one lady. Her husband wasn't there for a specific reason. And so I just asked, how is our friend doing? How is it doing? And, you know, she didn't do the polite Christian lie. So she said, no, really not good. And I'm like, oh, sorry for asking. So let's have this moment. What's happening? And what she said was that he really feels, he said to her in the week, he really feels, in a sense, abandoned by God, disappointed, and let down. He feels let down, and he feels he doesn't have the faith to ask God for something again. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have that, and at the moment, you know, he doesn't even have the desire to ask someone to pray for him because it's been done. It's been done, and nothing really works. So that's how she said her husband feels. And I just thought that it correlates with this feeling of insignificant or insufficient, or, you know, I can't get do it. So the Bible is full of stories like that, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it, that is the compilation of the history of the Bible. Every single instance of the Bible was a feeling of, uh-oh, I can't face Goliath, I can't face the Philistines, I can't conquer the promised land, I can't provide for my family, I can't have a baby, I simply can't, but God. So let's read one of those accounts in 2 Kings chapter 4. En ek nou baie lang inleiding gee, so nou kan ek kort breek. Now the wife of one of the sons of the prophets, please don't miss that. Now the wife of one of the sons of the prophets, now the wife of one of those people who were called to God to minister, cried to Elisha, saying, your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant really feared God. But the creditors has come to take my two children to be his slaves. Bad situation. Not like a widow today. Even a widow today is in a vulnerable situation. In the days of Israel, in the Middle East, can't be employed, doesn't have any right to represent herself before the council of elders to appeal to really, really a hopeless situation. A victim of a tragedy. It wasn't her fault. It's God's fault. It wasn't her fault that she's in this situation. She's a mother alone of two kids. And it's not just that she doesn't have a means to provide except to rely on the mercy of the community, which apparently didn't help. So it was a merciless community. And now the big thing is, her husband left her with a bit of debt. He died untimely. No one really plans their death, but this husband really, so she's sitting in this hopeless situation, and he has been apparently for quite some time when she came to Elisha and cried out, and Elisha said to her, what can I do for you? What do you want me to do for you? And then he says, what do you have? I want you to look at the order here, because when the Bible was canonized, this is deliberately put in there. It's like, woman, what do you really want? What do you really want? Do you want a meal? Do you want me to cancel your debts? Do you want me to intervene on your behalf? What is it that you really, really want? What is it that you desire? What is your vision in the situation? What do you really want? And I think it's quite a significant question that he poses to her. It's not just, he says, listen, you came and you told me your problem, but you don't tell me what you really desire. Just want to put it out there that sometimes that's how we pray. So obviously Elisha, in a sense, representing God, representative of God. And she comes and says, this is what's my problem. And Elisha says, well, what do you really desire? Where do you want to take this? How do you see this play out? What do you really, really desire? And then the next question is a question of inventory. Tell me, what do you have in your house? Which is a surprise to this woman, because she says, I am a poor widow with only debt, and my kids are about to be sold into slavery. And then he says, well, tell me, what do you have in your house? And I want you to look at this answer, because if we speak about a sense of insignificance or insufficiency, this is the issue here. The woman said to Elisha, I've got nothing. I just told you, I have absolutely nothing. I have nothing. I'm a poor widow with debt. That's what I have. I have debt. I've got creditors knocking on my door. That's all I have. He says, I got a bit of oil. I've got a bit of oil. I've got a bit of perfume. Other translation. I've got a bit of perfume here in my house. That's what I have. And then Elisha's like, thank you. Deal done. Go home. This problem solved. And this is such an important point for us, that when we go to God, and this is what I want to say to you today, if you feel that you're in a situation that is absolutely hopeless, with absolutely nothing, see God's answer through Elisha to this woman. You are aware of everything that you don't have, but I want to say it's easy to discount what you have because it's seemingly so insignificant. It's seemingly so insignificant. It's like the boy with the 5 loaves and 2 fishes with a crowd of 5,000 people. It's like Moses' rod. What do you have? I've got a stick. That's sufficient. Let's go deliver Israel from the most powerful empire in the world. How? With your stick. And when we get to the Red Sea, what do you have? I've got my stick. It's like, it's good. Let's work with that. Let's work with what you have. Because what you have in your hand is a gift from God. What you have in your home is a gift from God. That which is preserved for what you need. And this is what the story is all about. The servant has nothing except I've got nothing but this little bit of oil. I've got this little bit of oil in my house. Then he said, then go outside. And I like what he says first. He says, don't go to your home and do something with the oil. He says something. He says, go outside and borrow as much as you can. But bring empty vessels. It's quite a significant story, actually. Because what would the widow typically have done these past few months, years since her husband passed away? She would go to her neighbors to get vessels with food or vessels with something because she has to provide for her kids at home. And now all of a sudden, he says, no, go home and then go outside. Don't go to your house. Go outside to all the neighbors that you know. Knock on everyone's door, as many as you can. Kick down the doors, knock down the doors, and ask them for empty vessels. Don't ask them for full vessels. Ask them for empty vessels. The solution does not come apart from the community. But the miracle happens in your home. But go to the community and get as many vessels as you can. So typically, she would go from door to door and knock on a door and say, listen, neighbor. And she says, hi, Tani, sorry, hoe gaan dit? Gaan met jou seuns? Nee, jy weet mos, hulle stout en hulle is nou op pad om in slavernij in te gaan. Ek oorweeg dit miskien, maar dit is nie een slechte story. Anyway, so it's like knocking on your door and you want to go to the community the whole time. And then they say, sê, kan ek 'n bak kry? Sy sê, ja, waarvoor sê, ek is besig om kos te maak, kan ek vir jou inskep? Nee, gee my 'n leë bak. Give me an empty bucket. Give me an empty vessel. Give me something that has nothing in it. And they go, why would you want something empty? Why would you like an empty bank account? Why would you like an empty something? And then she would say, because God is about to do something. Because God is about to do something in my house. God said he's about to do a miracle. And we go from person to person in the community of faith to everyone in the community of Israel around her and knock on the doors as many buckets, as many vessels as she could get that is empty. And every time someone would say, why do you want an empty vessel? She would have to tell them, because God is about to do something. And this is something really significant that we have to account. When you're expecting something of God, a miracle, and this is a private situation, it's her problem, no one else really feels the pain. The community is obviously concerned, but not that concerned, otherwise the problem would have been solved. She would go from person to person and tell them, I need an empty bucket because God is about to do something. Yeah, God is about to do a miracle. And they would say, it's great, I'll pray with you, I'm expecting with you. I believe with you. Yes, let's see what God is about to do. Stirring the faith in the community. Other thing that I like about the story is that the bowls and the buckets, or in a sense represent, is that you go to people to ask for things which you yourself don't have. The miracle's going to happen in your home, but you don't have what it takes. And you go and you ask advice, and you ask for encouragement, and you ask for people around you, because this is the issue. The miracle's going to happen in your house, but it's going to require something of the community around you that you're going to borrow from them. Borrow from them. It's not going to own it. You're simply just going to use what they have and take it home. And then you go into your house, you shut your door, and you pour. You shut the door, and you pour in all these vessels. And I love this part of the story. Imagine, I'm not going to do this now, but imagine... She and her sons close the door. The hele gemeenskap is opgewonde. Everyone is standing at a door. I mean, you've been to communities like this where everyone is smoking over the there's fences and people don't have fences and people have got gates between their fences. It's a really close community. Everyone's living together in a sense. And you go to the door. So everyone by this time was walking with her and say, I want to see this show and see what's going to happen. And then she closes the door behind them saying, private matter, yeah, thank you. It's me and God, my oil and my sons. And she would start pouring. And what I love about the story is that, and this is what the story tells, it's not as though she put down the oil, go to sleep, wake up the next morning, and all the vessels are filled with oil. It took her to actually act in faith. She got the buckets, which is a sign of faith. She has as much faith, so the room was filled, the house was filled. But then literally she had to pour the oil. She had to do something with what she had. She had to act in faith. And it's stupid, and it's silly, and it's crazy. I mean, it's like ridiculous. You're going to pour oil, it's this small perfume bottle, and you've got bowls from all your neighbors. And the point is, the miracle only happened as she acted with this little that she had, which she thought was insignificant. That's the God that we serve, who multiplies the bread that we have, or the little Elijah and the bread and flour and oil, which he had to make, but it's a miracle that he had. So pouring it in, and when it's one is full, you set it aside. So she went from him, shut the door behind herself and her sons, and as she poured, they brought another vessel to her. And when the vessels were full, she would say to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There's not another." And then the oil stopped flowing. When the oil stopped flowing, she came to him and said to him, "Okay, so I've got all this oil." And he said to her the obvious thing, "Now sell all this stuff, pay off your debt, and live from what you have." A very simple, practical answer, not deep spiritual. This is what you need. This is what you're going to do. I'd like us to look at the points that we have up there in the next slide. Practically, this is a really simple encouragement today. When you're faced with a situation where you feel incompetent, insufficient, insignificant, where you feel that you're in a situation where you don't have anything, this is a story that we find quite a few times in the Bible. God saying, "God, this is my problem." The first thing that God's going to ask you is, "What would you like me to do for you?" So this is the first thing I just want to say to you. Whether it's mounting debt, whether it's a work company situation, whether it's a marital or family problem, doesn't matter what it is. If you're faced with a situation that is too big for you, the first thing that you do is to articulate, "What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?" To actually write it down, you know, to calculate your debt, to calculate the situation, to write down to God, "God, what is the one thing that you really want me to do?" And you write it down and you articulate it, because this is what the first thing that Elijah asked. And then the second thing is, after you've done that, is to prayerfully look inside your house, look inside your heart, look inside the thing that you have, to literally look and see, "God, what is it that you have entrusted to me?" The issue of stewardship. What is it, God, that I have at home that really seems absolutely insignificant? God, I've got this massive debt, but the one thing that I do have is I've got this idea, this crazy idea, God. I don't know, really know what to do. You know, I think people would like to see pictures of one another on the internet and to tell their stories. Like, who would want to do that? It's like, apparently everyone wants to share a picture of themselves on the internet at some point. You know, it's like Facebook, and there we have, boom, go. An idea which is entrusted to you, something small, something insignificant. Or maybe it's something physical that you have, or an ability. But this is what I want to say to you. If you feel it's insignificant, it's only insignificant if you leave it to yourself. But once you entrust it to God, God really does a miracle with what you have. God really does a miracle with what you have. But the miracle, first of all, happens when you go home, and then go outside and start walking in your community, to your neighbors, to the people around you, in your church, to talk to the guys and say, "Guys, this is my problem and this is what I have at home. I think I'm going to need some help from you. I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I don't want you to solve my problem. What would you do with the situation? What do you have? What have you experienced in this sense?" You know, anything, but just go to the people around you and ask in your community of faith. Don't try to face a situation by yourself, but go in your community of faith and walk around, knock on the doors, go to people. I remember when we planted the church in Pretoria, it's one of those simple stories. I mean, it's like, and I know, I'm so sorry that I have a church story. I wish I had another story as well. I have one or two, but church story is a good one. So we walked around, we were 25, we were really silly, we were young. And we felt God called us to do this thing about planting a church. Never done it before, never seen it before. Really crazy story, really. And did we feel insignificant? Absolutely. In the sober moments, we really felt absolutely insignificant. when you're facing a story, you really feel as though, wat het jy om te bid? Wat is jy mal in jou kop? Is jy mal? Why? We have so many gifted men, so many learned men, so many things happening. What do you have to bring? Why do you also want a voice in the city? And we had a clear reason from God, people groups that we really wanted and trusted God for. And then, this is the thing. We would borrow from people what we saw they did, how they did it. Amazing thing is it got us started, but it really didn't help us to solve the problems. But that's the whole point, to look at the form of what other people do, or what they see, or what they do, just to get advice from them and to look and to try it. But essentially, the miracle only happened once we stopped the door and we poured. Once we actually started with services, once we actually started with prayer, once we actually started with something. Nothing happened until we started acting in faith with what God has given to us. And eventually, great community of faith in Pretoria, with 8 other churches planted from that church, simply because we did not discount this little thing that we had from God, which actually flowed quite wide and quite powerful, which really did what we wanted to do. So this is the thing. What do you have? Pour it out in many vessels. Shut the door and pour. And then I just want to stop with this one last word today, which I want to encourage someone today with. Maybe you've tried, and you really look at your situation, and you're quite faithless, like this woman that I spoke to last night, actually the husband of the woman that I spoke to last night. And you really feel as though, man, I really don't have anything to bring in the situation. I really don't have anything to add. Ek is moeg. Ek kan nie meer nie. Then I want to encourage you with this word, to bring another vessel to God. To bring another vessel to God, saying, God, I have tried. I really feel as though I've put out my faith in a sense, but it really isn't sufficient. What I have isn't enough. What I have isn't enough to solve this problem. I've tried, but I can't do it yet. I've spoken to people. I've tried everything. But then God says to you this morning, just bring him another vessel. Just bring something else to put down, to pour yourself into. One more time. Do not stop giving, do not stop and do not give up. Do not count yourself as insignificant. What you have is insignificant for a situation. But this morning, whether it's a family situation, whether it's a debt situation, whether it's a crisis which is just beyond your home or just over the horizon, I want to challenge you this morning to not stop, but to simply say to God, God, I'm bringing you another vessel. I'm going to give it one more shot. God, I'm going to try again. I'm not going to stop and give up in the situation. I'm not going to stand back and say, okay, well, I failed and everything is over now. But to bring God another vessel, one more chance to say, God, this is something that I'm trusting you, and I'm going to act in faith. I'm going to do the stupid thing, and I'm going to pour myself into the situation. I'm going to try this thing, God, and I'm trusting you for a miracle. The woman didn't multiply the oil. A, she had to act in faith. It's just a faith. She couldn't multiply the faith. Nothing happened until she did that. Nothing happened until you do that. I want to challenge you today. I want to encourage you to bring God another vessel, to bring him something, saying, God, I'm trusting you to, in the widow's story, to deliver my family from debt and to save my 2 sons. I'm trusting you to do this, God. I can't do this. Will you do it for me? Our God is a God who has always made much of little, always made a lot out of very little. He's always done it. Don't discount what you have. Don't discount who you are. Don't feel disqualified. It only takes a little small boy, David, but nothing happens to Israel until David picks up a stupid stone and slings it. Don't give up. Don't stand insignificant. God is the God who makes much out of little. I'm going to hand over to Helmut. I'm going to ask Helmut to share a testimony with us and just to bring the service home. Amen.
Good morning. So I've actually got 3 stories, but it's very, very short, Ross. But I've got the mic at the moment. So the first story started when I was in university. My parents didn't really have money to put me through university, and I was using student loans and working hard and trying bursaries and, you know, making it through. And in my third year, around about end of July, so it's the beginning of the third term, I ran out of money. So there was literally nothing left, and I still had to live to the end of the year. And it was, and I was praying, and I was saying, God, where I'm going to get money. And I knew I could not ask my parents because they literally didn't have any money to give me. And I remember it so clearly. It was an evening service in those days in the beginning of the church. You're very lucky. We come in, we start the service at 9:30 and we end at 11. You know, there's a timeline to it. In those days, there was no timelines. We started at 6, and then we just ended, the church ended, you know, hopefully before midnight. And I know it was a long service, and there was the service was swapped around, and the offering was at the end of the service instead of, you know, like we normally do in the beginning. And the baskets are coming around, and I just clearly heard God says, give all the money that you have. And I'm sorry, I'm a little bit emotional because I'm thinking a lot of all the good stuff that God has, the awesome things that God has done through my life, and I'm just so thankful. And I literally had like 45 cents in my wallet. It was a Sunday evening, and it was I used to phone my mother or my parents every Sunday, just made the call, and then they call me back. So I said, God, it's fine. I've got 45 cents. Can I use 20 cents to phone my mother first so they can phone me back? And I felt God says, yeah, it's okay. You know, I can use. So I gave the rest. I let you. That was all I had. And I walked away from church, and I felt, you know, it's almost, sometimes when you have nothing, it's almost a relief because you've got nothing. You can't think of anything else. There's nothing else. You can't pull something on your own. There's just nothing else. And the next day, I was supposed to go receive. My father worked for the state, and there was this association which had given me in the beginning of the year a contribution. I can't remember how much it was. Say 250 rand. It wasn't a lot, and they gave it to me. And there was a ceremony where I had to go and receive the, you know, as a token, and they wanted to take pictures of all the kids at the help. Anyway, so I actually felt, you know, I didn't want to go, and I was speaking to one of my friends. I said, you know what, this is a waste of time. And he says, well, you know, at least the one thing is they're possibly going to be free food. So, you know, you know, it's like a function. So, in any case, I went, and I stood there, and I remember this guy. I still remember, if I close my eyes, I can still remember he's in his face. And we're talking, and he's old, older guy, my age probably now, so a young man. And I was talking to him, and I said, yeah, no, I've already spent the money. And I remember the look in his eyes, and he was really perplexed, but I didn't figure it out then. And so we went through this whole thing, and they called your name, and you had to stand there. In the end, we had to, group photos and everything, and there was food. Thankfully, so, you know, students are always hungry. And I walked away with an envelope, and I almost threw it away. I almost. That was so close. And I just felt God says, no, don't throw it away. Don't throw it away. And I opened it up, and in it was 1,500 rand. Student fees were 4,000 rand in those days. So 1,500 rand, if you think university costs you 50,000 now, it's a substantial amount of money. You know, and that was enough money for me to live through that whole year. And the next year, God provided in another way. And, I'm so thankful for those moments because you know it's God. He set me up, obviously. He set me up because I wasn't even thinking. And just this, it's amazing that this is, and I actually phoned them back and said, sorry, God, you probably made a mistake because you've given me already something. And they said, no, there's a Cape Town region, and then there's some national region. So this is, we're giving it from the national region. So that's the one story. And like Ross is saying this morning, it's like, you know, it's all about, our, you know, God is also testing our hearts. And, you know, what do we have? All God asked me was 20 cents. That's all I had. I gave that. And then two other stories later on in our life, and it was around 2008, 2009, we tried to build a house, and things went south. The builder left. Typical story of when the house is half built and there's no builder and no money. And we struggled to finish the house. And in that time, it was really tough. Like, at times, we really had no money. No money. There just wasn't anything. And God always provided. And I remember this one time, it was in 2009. It was October month. I was starting working on a big project. And I was working with an Indian guy that literally came from India, but was living in London at the time. And I felt God says to me, he was actually saying to me, he wants to see the Cape. He wants to go to the penguins and I don't know, you know, stuff in Cape Town. And I felt like I should help him. And I spoke to my wife and says, you know what? I can say I can take him, but literally all we have is petrol. That's literally all we have. There's no cash for anything else. We've got petrol. So she says, okay, how much? Okay, so we worked it out. I've got enough petrol to actually take him to the penguins, Cape Point, do all that thing and come back. And so I did it. I said to him, you know what? I'll take you. I feel like, you know. And so he paid for everything. I had no money. In any case. So it's a small thing, but one of the things is I didn't think about it. And then, you know, in that moment, we sort of connected and we became a bit of friends. And for the rest of that October, November, December, January, February, and March, it was about 6 months, we worked together. And for every day, he bought me lunch. So maybe for some of you, that's it, but it was awesome for me because I didn't have money for lunch. And everybody's always going out and I didn't. So he literally for 6 months, and at the end of the 6 months, the project ended. He moved on. God came through in another way, and I'll say to you now what happened then. And our financial problems became a little bit less, and I could afford lunch again. So literally for that season, I had enough. And then the last thing that sort of ties in with that is, so at that time, I think it was more or less the same time, we realized that we're not going to make this financially. We're probably going to be sequestrated, which was fine. And I just felt, you know, we were praying about it, and I just felt, okay, I need to, you know, tell at least a couple of people, you know, what we're going to, you know, because I'm a chartered accountant, so if you get sequestrated, you lose your, you know, there's a lot of implications around that. So I went to somebody and said to him, you know what, I just want to say to you, I'm going to resign from this activities and all these things. I'm going to remove myself because I'm, just one step back. So again, I had to drive there. So it literally was the last petrol money in any case. So, again, I had nothing else, but I really felt I had to go to them and be honest with them. And I felt like I should resign from that position. And they were saying to me, they listened to me carefully and then said to me, okay, it's fine. They understand. But they've at least got an old bucky standing on the, you know, and I can have the bucky and sell that for the debt. You know, we went 2 weeks later to fetch the bucky, and I was thinking, you know, like a rundown farm bucky, you know, that you have to, you know, put on new wheels, do a bit of panel beating, do a repaint, and then you can sell it maybe. And when we got there, it was a Toyota Hilux 4x4 with 20,000 kilometers on the clock. And it was just so amazing. It's just like, you know, would I have planned to do that? No, it was really just, I just felt God say, do that. And I just, like all the stories about this widow as well, there's always something that we have to do. And I could have said no, but I'm too proud. I'm not going to go and humiliate myself and say I'm going to resign and, you know, be open and honest. But God is faithful. And in every time, and there's so many other stories I can tell you, but every time God is faithful in our lives. And like Ross is saying, you know, is it over yet? No, it's not over till it's over. We're still alive. So there's always challenges, but God is faithful. And this morning I can tell you that if you lay down what you have before God and you open your heart, God is in the business of providing for us. He is our Father. And He'll provide from a guy from India to buy a lunch for 6 months. How awesome is that? So God is so good. And I really want to encourage you in those areas to just really go to God and pour out your heart and really ask Him what you want, what do you need. Like in that case, with a buck. We went to a guy, so if we don't have 200,000 rand in the next couple of months, you know, it's a couple of weeks, it's over. You know, it's done. We can't get out of it. There's no way. And God provided. So, you know what? God is good, and God is faithful, and God is always good, and He has not changed His heart, and He has not changed His heart towards you, to each one of you sitting here. He wants to provide whatever it is, whether it's finances, whether it's in relationships, whatever it is, don't give up. Don't give up. If you watch Survivor this week, Martinez, he gave up. He had a chance, but he gave up. And he walked away with nothing. You know, don't give up. Maybe none of you watch Survivor, but I have to watch it with a family. So it's one thing we do. So, you know, don't give up. There's always a way out. God is faithful. And this morning, if you really feel that, you know, there's a, you know, I almost rather rephrase it. So there's an area in your life that you really feel that you're inadequate, that you need God to come and intervene. So let's just sit and, you know, most of us know each other. Some of you are visiting. So, you know, if you're visiting, you're under no obligation. You are just friends and you can just be and, you know, enjoy. But if for the members, if you could just think about that thing right now that is challenging to you, whatever it is, and just pray with the person next to you or the group of two and three and just bring it before God. And if you really feel that you need ministry and prayer and you want us to pray for you, then I'd love to pray with you. And just pray with you and agree with you and stand with you in faith. Because God is awesome and God can do miracles, and He's actually doing miracles in our lives. Amen.